Hello, baseball fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Roster Rhetorical, the MLB Daily Dish podcast. I am your host, Chris Schubert, as always, and with me are my two lovely co-hosts. First, let me introduce the wonderful Mike Bates. Mike, how are you?
I am good, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm good. And returning after a two-week hiatus.
Finally.
Okay, I was going to get to this. Matt, welcome back.
Thank you.
And we have to start here because last week on this show, as the listeners can attest to, you were called out. Mike called you out, and I believe the quote was, "Matt's being lazy by missing the last 2 weeks."
I don't want to quibble about, you know, what exact wording there was, but definitely, you know, we have cause to question Matt's dedication to the show.
Matt?
I mean, I guess that's fair, but, you know, I was at the winter meetings 2 Sundays ago, which Chris and I talked about in our, I want to say, our third lost podcast now.
That number's getting way too high.
Lost podcasts. Podcasts.
And then, yeah.
Is that like your girlfriend up in Canada?
We could create an entire playlist of just lost episodes. We have so many of them.
This is true. Yeah, it's definitely three.
Three or four, I think, at this point. But Matt, it is good to have you back, all kidding aside, and hopefully Mike doesn't throw down with you this episode because you're here, but can't make any promises.
He was just telling us before the show that he might not be around next week, so, you know.
Oh, this is true. Mike,
a little contradiction or hypocrisy going around.
Listen, I've made it very clear that I would be happy to record next week. The later we go, the more likely I am to be there. You know what? This is riveting for our listeners, guys. But, you know, having not missed a podcast in quite a while, certainly not two in a row, I think my credentials, my reputation, my commitment to the podcast is beyond reproach.
So we're all back together, and we're getting off to a great start. That's good. I'm glad we're all getting along. But, guys, we have a couple things to get to this week. Not a lot going on, but a couple major things happened since Mike, you, and I met last Sunday. And the big news...
Would that be when we met without Matt?
Yes, okay. I see where we're going with this. This is going to be a running theme this week. Okay. Yes, that would be when we were not here with Matt last week. Okay, got it. Well, the big news of the week is that Johnny Cueto signed with the Dodgers.
And
no, that's not true.
Not the Dodgers. What? Okay, Giants. See, Mike, this is your fault. You're getting us all riled up, and now I'm not saying things right.
Oh, who are you, Steve Harvey?
Okay. So this show is getting off to a peachy start. So Johnny Cueto signed with the Giants... And Matt is our resident Giant expert, so before I make another blunder and become Steve Harvey, I will let Matt take this away.
That seemed to come together pretty quickly. It seems to be like a theme this offseason that trades or signings don't really leak out until they're about to happen or until after they've happened, and Cueto was the same. I want to say it was a couple hours before the contract was finalized, Buster only tweeted out that they were close and the Giants were being really aggressive. And I think, you know, for the price that it wound up being, $130 million for 6 years with an option for a seventh and an opt-out after two, I think it's a great deal, especially for both sides. And, you know, as a Giants fan, I really love the fact that the opt-out is in the second year rather than, say, year three or year four. So I think the hope of a lot of Giants fans, potentially even the front office, obviously I can't say for sure, but at least I know I can speak for myself in that I would love for Cueto to pitch, you know, like the ace that they've paid for 2 years, opt out, and then the Giants will use that money elsewhere, say come the 2018 offseason, which has a whole list of stud pitchers and just free agents in general.
Yeah, Mike, we talked about this last week on the show. Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we talked about how opt-outs were kind of the running theme of the offseason, that a lot of guys were getting those in their contracts. And here it is again, coming up with Cueto getting one in his deal with the Giants. And we said last week when we were talking specifically about Cueto that we could see him taking a deal. We thought maybe potentially 4 or 5 years with an opt-out after two, but he ended up getting – it was 6 years, right?
6 years with an option for a seventh.
So six with an option for a seventh and the opt-out after two. And, Mike, this just continues the running theme of players getting these opt-outs and probably banking on getting more money later on down the road.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty clear that the second half that Cueto had after he was traded to the Royals was kind of a disappointment for him. You know, he had pretty significant trouble keeping the ball in the ballpark and gave up a lot of hits in front of really great Royals defense, so it really didn't make a whole lot of sense. His strikeouts dropped when he went to the American League. I think the move back to the National League really helps him, specifically to a good pitcher's park and in front of, again, a really good defense. Those opt-outs are really interesting, aren't they? And the fact that Cueto took one that's going to put him back on the market when literally everybody else is back out on the market. If I were the Giants, I might be a little worried that just looking at who else was out there, he might just decide to stick it out. But at the same time, if you're stuck with Johnny Cueto for 6 years, that's not a bad situation to be in.
No, and Matt, we seem to always talk about this. What year is he a free agent? Because I always forget how the opt-out thing works with the years. And
it's an opt-out after the second year, so he is guaranteed to be a Giant through at least the 2017 season. So he could opt out after the World Series in 2017, which could put him on a new team or return to the Giants at the outset of 2018.
So that's the year before the big class.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
That's
okay.
The year before the Harpers and
okay.
Harpers.
Never mind then. He's definitely opting out as long as he stays healthy.
I confused the way they do it in baseball. Like on Baseball Reference, they'll have the year they're a free agent, but it's actually like the month prior. It's weird the way they do it, and it confuses me. So that's why I wanted the clarification.
Good call.
He'll be a free agent, and so he can be a free agent after that year. And off the top of our heads, do we know any big-name free agent pitcher?
I haven't looked that far ahead.
Okay,
yeah, 2017,
Matt.
I'm not sure. I know Kane, just as being a Giants fan, Matt Kane will, 99% be a free agent at that time. There's an option for at least one more year. It could be two options. I can't remember off the top of my head, but Kane's guaranteed deal runs out after 2017, so the Giants could have a lot of money coming off the books if Cueto opts out and they void Kane's contract.
All right, so Matt, do me a favor. I'm going to ask Mike a question, and while I'm doing that, you tell me who are some big-name free agent pitchers.
I gotcha.
Mike, the money that Cueto got, now there is an opt-out, but he still got $130 million. Is that an accurate number? Did that surprise you at all? Did you think that that was what he was going to end up getting? I know we know he turned down a deal from the Diamondbacks for about $126. So does it surprise you that the market eventually came around for him and he got a decent amount of money?
No, I think we talked last week about how he was probably going to have to settle for $22 to $23 million, which is essentially where he's at. I don't think the 6 years and $120 million that he was offered by the Diamondbacks doesn't look too out of character or too inappropriate given what he eventually signed for. All in all, it does look like a really good deal for both the Giants and for Cueto and fair all the way around.
Matt?
All right, I have your answer.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm just making sure that I do have the right list because that would be awkward. All right, so Lackey, okay, here we go. So the free agent pitchers, at least starting pitchers, will be CC Sabathia, John Lackey, Marco Estrada could be, Francisco Liriano, Ubaldo Jimenez, Clay Buchholz, Matt Garza, Jaime Garcia, and it's kind of a lot of other guys that are, tier two, tier three, not necessarily, nothing like the group that we saw this year.
So as currently constructed, Cueto's going to come back on the market as probably as long as he doesn't get hurt, in which case he won't opt out, he could potentially come back on the market as the best pitcher out there.
Yeah, which is what I was going to say. Alex Cobb is available, but you don't know how, regardless of, I guess if, he won two Cy Young Awards over the next 2 years, his price would skyrocket, but barring something like that, he's not going to be a huge contract that you have to spend on. Jared Parker is going to be a free agent, Michael Pineda, Tyson Ross, but assuming Cueto can pitch, like the Giants are expecting him to, I can't see any way unless that he doesn't use the opt-out because he would be in line for a huge payday, and he'd still be younger than Zach Greinke in 2017 after when, he could theoretically be a free agent.
So he set himself up really nicely to, if he does pitch really well over the next 2 years, to get another big payday and be the top pitcher that year. So that's probably best, especially with the class that's coming in after him in 2018, that to get that opt-out before that, so potentially make more money before the big storm. But that could cost him, because teams may not want to spend the year before everybody hits free agency in 2018-19, and he may have to take less. So,
well, I mean, anybody who wants to compete that year and who needs an ace is going to shell out. I mean, let's be clear. If you have needs and they are immediate, you're going to try to meet those needs. And I don't know that teams who are, you know, legitimately viewing themselves as contenders can afford to sit out a free agent season if they have a need and Cueto's available.
It'll be very interesting. He set himself up very nicely to potentially make even more money down the road. But guys, let's switch from one big story to the other big story of the week, and that is that Todd Frazier finally was moved, and it wasn't to a team that maybe we all expected him to be moved to. The Chicago White Sox ended up getting Todd Frazier in a three-team deal between the White Sox, the Reds, and the Dodgers. And Mike, I'll start with you. The return for the Reds, not very good, to say the least. A lot of scouts were saying that the Dodgers got back better, and they didn't give up a top player in the deal. It was rather interesting.
Well, I don't think that's true. I don't think the Dodgers got back much, to be honest with you. I think the White Sox did a very good job of, only giving up spare parts, what to them were spare parts. The Reds probably didn't get full value for Todd Frazier, but they didn't get bad players either. Second baseman they got, I think it's Peraza. Is that correct? Did I say that right?
Yeah, Jose Peraza.
I think he's going to play, especially if they can move Brandon Phillips, although there are some complications to that right now. I think he's going to be kind of the guy they hoped Billy Hamilton was going to develop into at second base, and that's fantastic. Shebler and Dixon are not bad prospects, but they're also not elite. So, I would say the Reds probably didn't do quite as well as they could have, but they didn't necessarily do poorly here. And, of course, I think the White Sox got a really, really good player for far less than the going rate. Micah Johnson, Frankie Montaz, and Trace Thompson just don't strike me as much more than spare parts. Montaz has big upside, but there's also a lot of risk that comes with him. I'm really interested to see what the White Sox are going to do, given that they seem to be going for that second wild card.
Matt, what does this do for the White Sox next year in terms of their chances in the Central, and as Mike said, for that potential second wild card spot?
I think it's going to be really hard for them to make the playoffs. Obviously, the second wild card, barring a huge change, or maybe they go out and surprise someone by signing one of the remaining free agents. It's going to be hard for them to make the playoffs. I don't think they've really changed enough. Todd Frazier is obviously a big get, and they really didn't have to give up much to get him. And they'll have him for 2 years now, so it's not like they have to go all in right now.
Right.
They've got 2 years of Frazier, so they've got 2 years to figure this out. They still have Chris Sale, Carlos Rodon. They've got Carson Fulmer coming up in the minor leagues, who might not be really far away. I know he's only got 1 year of professional baseball under his belt, but I saw him pitch a couple times at the College World Series, and I've never seen someone's fastball break as much as his. It kind of reminded me of Garrett Cole. I know earlier in the year there was a gif of Garrett Cole's four-seam fastball breaking about a foot and a half in towards a right-handed batter, and I remember watching Carson Fulmer, and it drew me. At least I was reminded of the Garrett Cole gif then. Their outfield is still a problem, especially if Melky Cabrera doesn't play like the player that they're paying him to be. Their bullpen is solid. I like they recently signed the 3-year extension for another reliever. His name is escaping me right now, which is awkward since I was the one who wrote the article. But, you know, the AL is a tough division, especially with the emergence of the Blue Jays now. The Red Sox are looking to be better next year. The Yankees aren't, you know, they were a good team last year. They made the playoffs. The Astros, the Angels are always, you know, with Mike Trout, you can never count them out. But I'm not really sure just Todd Frazier pushes them that much closer to a playoff spot as, you know, they would hope.
Was Nate Jones the name you were looking for?
Nate. Yes. Yeah. That's okay. It.
All right, Nate Jones. Mike, I'm going to go to you because you actually wrote an article saying that getting Todd Frazier wasn't enough for the White Sox.
Yeah, no, it's not. But, I mean, it's also a really good step in the right direction. And he's not the only guy they've gotten. They also went out and traded for Brett Laurie, who is not a world beater. But I think one of the things we have to think about is just how bad the White Sox were in the infield last year, aside from Jose Abreu. Let me pull up their splits here real quickly. Their second baseman hit as a group 222 with a 275 on base percentage and a 305 slugging percentage. Their third baseman hit 226 with a 277 on base percentage and a 345 slugging percentage. And then their shortstops hit 243, 281, 350. Awful. Abysmal. Like, just terrible. And bringing in guys like Laurie, who can provide league average offense and potentially okay defense at second base, hopefully, and Todd Frazier, who's a very good defender at third base and who has a ton of right-handed power, those are huge upgrades. Those are huge, like, multi... I would say the Frazier is at least like a 5-win swing. Laurie's at least a 2, maybe a 3-win swing, depending on his defense. You know, Samardzija's out, but he had a poor season, and they're going to turn to Eric Johnson in the rotation. He's somebody I have a good deal of faith in. You know, I don't think... You know, when you're shooting for that second wild card, when you're shooting to be a team in contention, really what you're looking for, I think, these days is a team that's good enough to win 81 games, and then you hope that a few things break right. And I think that the White Sox are closer to that than probably we think they are, especially if they do get that bounce back from Melky Cabrera and maybe a dead cat bounce from Adam LaRoche. You know, I think they probably upgraded their catching situation as well. It'll be interesting to see what they can do. You know, the AL Central is primed, at least in my mind, to be a pretty competitive division next year.
I think the key to all this is what Matt said, that Frazier is not just a one-year rental, and that they have this ability to sort of, you know, try for it this year, but not go all in and, you know, exacerbate all of their resources
right
for 2016 and then reevaluate what worked, what didn't in 2016, and then go for it in 2017. Allows them to build, let prospects get a couple, you know, closer to the big league level, and that's the Frazier move gives them a little bit more flexibility in what they're able to do. That's why I think it's a decent move for them and could allow them to at least compete for the second wild card spot, maybe not get it, but at least be there, you know, all season long.
Yeah, and, you know, let's say that, you know, the White Sox plans, you know, don't go the way, you know, some people regress. Laurie's not who they thought. Maybe Saladino, you know, comes back to earth. Melky's not as, you know, he's still the player that he was last year. If they realize at, you know, some point in 2017 that, you know, they don't have a shot at the playoffs, they can trade Todd Frazier themselves to the highest bidder and use him as a trade chip to, you know, kind of help maybe a quick rebuild or, you know, a full rebuild if that's the route that they eventually decide that they need to go in.
Yeah, it gives them the flexibility that I think a team like them needs when they're transitioning from a rebuild to potentially competing without crippling their long-term future. But guys, let's move to another story of the week, probably our last big one from this past week, and that is the debacle that happened between the Dodgers and Hisashi Iwakuma. I know I tried to put Johnny Cueto on the Dodgers earlier. Maybe that's because I felt bad for them after not getting Iwakuma. And guys, what was surprising to me, and Matt, you can attest to this, is we talked a lot in the offices of the Daily Dish, that's probably the best way to describe it, about why we weren't you know, hearing a, you know, agreement was finalized, physical was passed, you know, Iwakuma and the Dodgers have agreed to a deal, something like that. And then out of nowhere, it sort of fell apart, and Jerry Dipoto swooped in and got Iwakuma back.
Yeah, I want to say it was the day before it happened. Actually, I asked Cotillo in the, you know, in our so-called offices, why it had been held up, and he kind of came back and said, "I'm not getting any answers, but it's definitely weird." And I think that's the only way you could describe it until we found out what was wrong, because it'd been 3 weeks, and you know, there had been not even a peep from either side, and then all of a sudden a foreign newspaper, I believe, reported that he'd failed the physical, and then by the end of that day, you know, 9 hours later or so, he was a Mariner again, and announced it. You know, the Mariners announced that in one of the coolest ways I think I've ever seen a team announce a signing, which was that Jerry Dipoto let, you know, the employees of the Mariners know before everyone else. And with the caveat that they couldn't tweet about it for at least 45 minutes. But, you know, it was cool to see a GM get that excited about re-signing a beloved player, especially one that, you know, he's never been the GM for. And also, I think it's a great deal for the Mariners. You know, Iwakuma has the same total money, at least in the contract. It's not guaranteed, which is, you know, what I believe the sticking point was with the Dodgers. But it's a one-year deal with two option years that are triggered by something. I don't know if it starts made, innings pitched, but two vesting options. So, you know, assuming he is healthy, then he's going to get about $45 million again. And if not, the Mariners have a guy that they know pitches well in their stadium for their team and their division. And you know, they didn't see anything wrong with the medicals. So, you know, as Dipoto said it, this was kind of a cherry on top for their offseason, because in his eyes they were done. And then once Iwakuma came back on the market, they took advantage.
Mike, where does this leave the Dodgers now? They missed out on Greinke. They didn't get Cueto. None of the big names came there. This was their big, you know, move pitching wise, and then it fell apart. Where do they go from here?
Well, I think it's got to be a trade at this point, right? I mean, there's word out there that they're talking to the Rays and that they're talking to I'm blanking on
Indians.
The Indians, thank you. With Danny Salazar and Carlos Carrasco, and the Rays about Jake Odorizzi. You know, it's hard to imagine a more horked offseason than the one that the Dodgers have had. You know, you're left wondering why they didn't go for the more sure bet of Zach Greinke. We're used to the Dodgers having bottomless pockets, being able to pay for whoever they want and get whoever they want. And all of a sudden, their biggest off-season acquisition, they come back off of that, and now they're left with what? Re-signing Chase Utley? Is that their big offseason move so far? Brett Anderson taking
the qualifying
offer. I mean, this is not the Dodgers we've grown accustomed to seeing over the last few years, and I just can't help but wonder why.
Well, Go ahead, Matt.
The weirdest thing to me about the Iwakuma for Greinke swap, at least, you know, that's what it looked like at the beginning of the year, you know, once that deal was quote-unquote announced, was that Greinke is entering his age 33 season, I believe, in 2016.
I'll fact check you. Go ahead.
So, in Iwakuma, the deal that they signed him to would have taken him through his age 37 season. And so it was strange to see the Dodgers make this weird trade-off that they would have rather had 3 seasons of Iwakuma where he's 35, 36, 37 rather than having Greinke at 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, and then potentially 38, although they never went to a sixth year. But, you know, I agree with Bates. It's just been such a weird offseason for a team that was a financial juggernaut for the last 2 years. You just wonder if maybe Friedman and Zaidi weren't brought in to be, you know, the Moneyball team with the deepest pockets, but if they were expected to be the Moneyball team that has a little bit more money than everyone, but we'd like to get our spending in check.
Zach Greinke's 2016 season will be his age 32 season. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, okay, so it's even stranger. It'll be 32, 33, 34, 35.
So, I mean, that's a really interesting thing here is that you bring up is maybe the Dodgers do need to get their spending right. One of the things I, you know, I read a piece in on Forbes.com by Mike Ozanian, I think the guy's name was, and he's trying to figure out where the Dodgers are getting their money from, and he doesn't know. And that, to me, is really scary, and that's a huge red flag. But he also mentioned that they tried to sell a significant portion of the team last year, and that that deal fell through to South Korean investors who backed out because presumably they looked at the books and were fairly concerned. You know, this is not a cash-rich team or a cash-rich ownership group, it would seem. But they've been spending like they are. And at this point, boy, what do you do? Except, you know, just rein it in.
Can I propose a hypothetical here, guys?
Please do.
Imagine if Brett Anderson turned down the qualifying offer from the Dodgers. Their offseason would be even more of a nightmare than it already is.
Well, maybe, but they also would have had another $15 million to spend. So, I mean, maybe, but
yeah,
it would be another spot they would have to have filled, though, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right, but you know, maybe, you know, if they had gone into the offseason with two holes, you know, Greinke and Anderson, that, you know, potentially would have changed their plans a great deal, rather than saying, oh, we just need to get one more, you know, above league average starter in here. Now we need to get two.
Right.
But it's an interesting question. I don't think the Dodgers expected Anderson to accept that qualifying offer.
They might be glad he did, though.
They might be now. You know, I think Colby Rasmus taking his really changed the, at least the player viewpoint on taking qualifying offers, because, you know, didn't expect that to happen, didn't expect Wieters to take his. Anderson made more sense once the first two had fallen, but, you know, they were the first three ever to take the QOs, and I think that really changed the offseason.
Scott Kazmir is also a potential fit for them, as I'm sitting here thinking about it. He would be a cheap lefty that could give them solid innings. He might not be the worst option in the world if they can't get anything done on the trade market.
I mean, his second half didn't look real great either. Giovanni Gallardo would be interesting as a potential match for them, especially considering how left-handed they are. I like Kazmir, but he's also he's one of my, you know, I love guys who kind of stare at the abyss and the abyss stares back, and then they get on with their lives and do a hell of a job. He was almost out of baseball, but you do have to worry, especially given his second half last year, that, you know, is the magic kind of dissipating again.
They could also empty the clip and just trade the farm for Jose Fernandez.
Well,
I mean, they did just get prospects, and people said after the Frazier deal that maybe they were loading up prospects to go to Miami and say, "Here, we'll give you all these guys." Now,
but those aren't prospects.
I don't know, like, if Jeffrey Lurie is even serious about trading Fernandez. So we can debate that in circles, but if there's,
I think Fernandez would be gone if the Dodgers called up and said, "Hey, you can have the three guys we just acquired plus the three that you already asked for," which was, I believe,
Seager,
Urias, and Peterson, which isn't gonna happen.
No, that's an insane deal.
Franchise players. So, you know, Fernandez isn't unavailable. It's just that no one's going to offer the prospect package that it would take, because they'd be insane to do it.
Right.
It's possible because it's the Dodgers. That's the only thing I'm saying.
I would say that, except for the fact that they've been stockpiling prospects, and Andrew Friedman and Zaidi have been treating the Dodgers like a Rays team or like an A's team, where they need to stockpile prospects because
right.
they can't afford the big name guys.
And Friedman doesn't make dumb deals. I mean, he's making no deals at the moment, which is a problem in and of itself. But he doesn't make dumb deals and or insane deals, as we characterized what the Marlins were asking for.
Right.
Well, while we've had all this activity this week, we've also had some inactivity. And I mentioned before the show to both Mike and Matt that it's been moving very slowly, and Mike yelled at me.
I don't know. You got four big moves in a week. You know, that doesn't feel, I guess.
None of the big bats moved. That was my main point. You just yelled at me.
No, I do that. Listen, yeah. I've been drinking scotch.
Okay. That's your excuse for everything. But no, seriously. It is. But seriously, the four big bats still out there, Chris Davis, Alex Gordon, Yoenis Cespedes, and Justin Upton, are still on the board. And, Mike, when we did our post-winter meetings review slash rest of winter preview, we talked about these four guys and said it may be slowly developing, and at some point one of these guys would go off the board. But there's really nothing in terms of traction with any of these guys getting anywhere.
Well, it sounds like Chris Davis and the Orioles are still talking, at least on the ownership level, and Scott Boras. And I wouldn't put it past Peter Angelos to just say, listen, we're going to sign this guy. But with Boras, you know, it wouldn't shock me if Davis just kept holding out for as long as possible, knowing he still had the Orioles on the line. You know, we haven't seen much traction with Gordon. I was fairly convinced we were going to see at least some movement on one of them in the last week, or at least before the holiday, and we haven't. You know, still got a couple of days, but at this point, you have to assume that they'll be on the market in January.
Matt, here's where this entire thing really plays out for the entire landscape of baseball. You have guys like Cespedes, Upton, and Gordon sitting there at the top of the food chain in terms of, you know, their talent level and how much they can impact a team. But then you have guys like Dexter Fowler and Denard Span, who are probably Tier 2, Tier 3 outfielders, and they really can't do anything until those other three guys move. I mean, they're kind of limited into who they can compete against and what they're able to do. How much of an impact is on them because these three guys haven't gone anywhere yet?
It's, you know, it's obviously slowed their market, but I think we might even be at the tipping point where teams that might be interested in the Cespedeses and Uptons of the world might go, you know, Fowler's cheaper. You know, he's had an amazing OBP, you know, throughout his entire career. Denard Span doesn't have a qualifying pick attached to him, which I think surprised a lot of people. So you might, it wouldn't shock me to see a team target one of those two guys and then, you know, kind of wrap up their offseason rather than have to play wait and see with Chris Davis, with Upton, Cespedes, and Gordon, who, you know, I thought Gordon was, you know, headed to the Giants. I didn't think that they were going to spend another $130 million on a pitcher. And then, you know, Bates mentioned that Boras might have Chris Davis kind of sit out until January, February, or, you know, maybe right before spring training, much in the way that Prince Fielder did, who wound up getting $200+ million because Victor Martinez blew out his knee.
Right.
But Chris Davis really doesn't seem to have any market outside of the Orioles, which is really strange for someone that hits as many home runs as he does. And also it completely takes away any leverage that Boras would normally have, you know, when he would have 8 or 9 teams bidding over the same player. He could say, well, yeah, you know, $180 million is a lot of money, but the Yankees just offered $190. Can you do better? And he can't really go back to the Orioles and say, hey, some other team just offered $160 million. And they could go, no, they didn't. We're the only ones bidding for him right now. I know the Cardinals had been linked to Davis at one point as a potential outfielder. But outside of those two teams, it just doesn't look like anyone's interested in Chris Davis.
It's just like Western movie quiet with all of these guys. Like, there's just
like
not...
it's quiet, it's too quiet?
Right, like, it's quiet, it's too quiet. Exactly, Mike. Like, none of these guys are even, like, remotely linked to a team, besides Davis, because him and the O's are having an ongoing conversation. But, like, we haven't heard Cespedes linked to anybody. Now, you know, there have been reports that the Angels were interested, but nothing like they're working on a deal or their representatives are talking. There's nothing going on. And I wonder if we are seeing a transition away from the power-hitting outfielders, guys that normally would get $150, $200 million on the market, to teams really wanting to construct their lineups with guys who can get on base, you know, draw walks, play good defense, and maybe not so much as guys who can hit 20, 30 home runs every
year.
Yeah,
but that's Gordon, right? I mean, Gordon isn't a huge power bat, but he's good defense. He's take some walks, get on base, decent batting average. you know,
that's fair.
That's who he is. And he's not even getting a nip in this market. You know, they're going to sign, and they're going to sign...
No, Mike, none of them are going to sign.
You don't think so?
They're all going to be free agents all year round.
Well, that's going to be a hell of a story. But, you know, it's frustrating. I think we all want to see something happen, especially because, you know, we need things to write about. But, you know, it'll all shake itself out in the end. And, you know, it's interesting that the Giants seem to have taken themselves out of the market for one of these guys. But somebody will pop in.
Yeah, at some point, the domino effect will happen. It seems to always happen with big-name free agents.
Right.
When one falls, another falls. It's just really figuring out who that domino will be. And I don't think Chris Davis can be that domino because he is a first baseman compared to everyone else who's an outfielder. So if you're looking at just the outfielders, you know, maybe it's Upton that falls first and then the rest, you know, are in line with them. But maybe it's like Matt said, and a guy and teams realize that, you know, maybe I don't want to spend $150 million on a Cespedes or an Upton, and they sign a Span or a Fowler, and that's the domino that causes teams to react and then go out and get guys. So something has to happen, and that domino effect will follow suit. I think the real question is just when will it happen and who will be involved. Matt, we lost you for a second.
There. Yeah, I got kicked out.
I think it was Mike. Mike did it.
God damn it, Mike.
Listen, if you want to take a break in the middle of the podcast, Matt, I know it's in keeping with kind of the track record that you've set, but you know, it seems pretty unprofessional to me.
Yeah, well, so I apologize if I'm repeating anything that Mike said, you know, while I was gone. Maybe my Skype got so bored that, you know, just decided to leave for a good 30 seconds. But none of the big-name teams that you'd normally expect to be in on the $150 million guys seem to need an outfielder. The Dodgers are seemingly set and, you know, apparently not willing to spend a whole lot of money. The Red Sox definitely don't need an outfielder. The Yankees don't appear to be in need of one. And the Tigers, another team that you normally expect to be out there bidding for the really pricey guys, aren't. Now, having said that, and this is the thing that I hoped Mike didn't say, is that I could definitely see the Tigers suddenly getting back into the outfield market.
Oh, I did not say that, but yeah.
Okay, so you're good. So, go ahead.
Because, you know, Al Avila during the, not to be mistaken with the new White Sox catcher, but his dad, the GM of the Tigers, said at the winter meetings that they were definitely out on Cespedes or Upton, but knowing their owner, Mike Ilitch, not personally, obviously, just his reputation, I could definitely see if it's, you know, end of January, early February, and Cespedes is still out there, that he authorizes a bump in spending, and they go out and sign him to a six-year deal for, you know, X amount. Obviously, it'd be north of $120 million, $130 million. But that totally wouldn't surprise me if the Tigers decide to jump back into the outfield market.
I think that's a really good point, because the reason why guys' price tags are upwards in the $140, $150, you know, $160 million price range is because normally the big spenders are in there competing, and that drives the price up. But when those big teams, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Tigers, the Red Sox, when those teams are out, a team, as Mike loves to point out on the show, like the Houston Astros, they don't have $160 million laying around to sign Yoenis Cespedes. They just don't. The A's don't. The Rays don't. The Mets don't. Teams that are, you know, young, you know, that build up prospect systems but don't have a lot of money, they can't go out and get one of these guys because they don't have $150, $160 million to spend, and that has left the market to just be stone quiet.
I want to jump in, though, real quick. I think
I mentioned the Astros.
Because you did mention the Astros, and I think the Astros are a team that is primed to jump into the market at some point. And blow us away with. I'm shocked that they didn't pony up for Zach Greinke. You know, I can understand they're a little gun shy after they gutted the system and gutted their fan base for so many years, but they are a team on the rise and they have to know it. So I'm really amazed that they didn't pull out all the stops.
I wonder if Colby Rasmus accepting the qualifying offer had anything to do with that. Obviously,
but it's a 1 year. It's 1 year.
Right, but you know, it, you know, for a team like the Astros, it isn't a huge market. $15.8 million for 1 year is a lot of money. Now maybe they could have backloaded the deal or deferred like the Diamondbacks wound up doing. But I don't think Colby Rasmus accepting the qualifying offer was in their offseason plans at all.
Well, but it should have been because, listen. Colby Rasmus was not getting a deal for $15 million a year, and seems like a prime guy to take that. But
I would agree. But you know, there have been a lot of those guys since the qualifying offer was invented, where you went down the list and thought, oh yeah, you know, that guy could take it.
Yeah,
and then spurned. True, like Stephen Drew, for example.
Right. I mean, these got for. You know, however many years the system's been in place, two or three, there's been a history of nobody accepting the offer. So the Astros thought, he's not going to accept it. You know, obviously when you put out that offer, you run the risk of a guy accepting it. But the track record was that nobody accepts a qualifying offer. And they took a chance, and Rasmus, you know, accepted it, and they got $15.8 million on the books. Now, Mike, I know you really want the Astros to do something. I think they're your second favorite team, actually. but, you know,
that's probably accurate. Actually,
you champion them on this show more than you do the Twins.
Yeah, well, the Twins frustrate the hell out of me.
So you just, the Astros are like your scapegoat? You just talk
They're
about
like
them
my mistress.
Okay. That's a really bold analogy, but we'll go with it. Okay. So they now have $16 million on the books that they didn't, you know, particularly maybe budget in, and that may have changed their mindset. Now, they could still go out and get a Span or a Fowler. Is that something that you'd be okay with for your mistress?
I mean, maybe, but they, but those guys hit left-handed, and so does Rasmus. So, or no, Fowler's a switch hitter. I'm sorry. So maybe. I don't know.
Put you on the spot. I know.
Yeah,
I
mean. You are. You're. Putting, you know how I hate that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I have a lot of faith in their leadership, frankly. I'm surprised, but I'm you know, until they start doing something that strikes me as not smart, I'm going to assume they know what they're doing.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us this week. And hopefully for our sake, more things happen between now and Sunday.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that is going to happen.
Oh, bold prediction time.
Yeah.
Play the sound effect.
I am going to spend the holidays in Minnesota with my children and my family, and we are going to have a wonderful time, and I'm going to drink scotch.
That was your bold prediction for the show. Okay. All right.
And I hope...
That was a more so what Mike...
Yeah, that was more of the newest segment of the show.
And I hope that each and every one of our listeners has a similarly wonderful holiday season.
Wow, that was so well put, Mike. You're a master of words. Matt, did we miss anything? You're our fact check guru. Did we get anything wrong? That you?
I could be wrong, but I want to say at one point someone referred to Brett Anderson as Chase Anderson.
I hope not.
Oh, I really hope nobody did.
Just in case, though, we have it covered.
Yeah. Okay. So Brett Anderson, not Chase Anderson. Chase Anderson is the Diamondbacks pitcher. Just so we are all clear, right?
Yes.
I didn't get that wrong.
No, you're good.
Mike, as you do every week to close the show, tell the lovely people where they can find the show.
Well, Chris, I think they could find it on
you
iTunes.
You think? Hopefully you know where they can find
it. Well, listen, I do not have an iPhone, so I assume they can find it on iTunes. In fact, I know they can find it on Blog Talk Radio. You know one other place that I know that they can find it?
Where,
they can find it on MLBDailyDish.com, which is the site that all three of us write for. And every day, every morning, there's our morning recap, everything that happened in the last day. And it's always right at the bottom there for your listening pleasure. And also, if you don't have an iPhone, if maybe you're an Android person, download it at your favorite podcast, Emporium, or whatever.
Emporium, that was a nice word. That was good. Yes, and if you do, you know, have it on iTunes, make sure to subscribe there.
Oh, and rate us.
Yes, and rate us.
See if you can rate us separate, like
I don't individually. Think they can rate the host separately, and I'm assuming you're going to make a Matt joke here. So
I,
go ahead.
I was just going to – no. In the spirit of the holidays, I think people should be generous and rate us all as well as they feel comfortable. Given that they might have more exposure to the two of us, Chris, than they would to Matt, it would be acceptable if they decided that they didn't have enough information and simply skipped Matt.
I can agree with that as a, you know, a data person, so I'll go with that analogy.
Okay. Well, hopefully we have more news next week, so Mike and Matt are not fighting with each other, and Mike's not lobbing insults across the Skype call. It's probably for the best. All right, anything else we need to get to before we wrap this thing up?
Follow us on Twitter.
Twitter name?
Twitter, yeah.
Follow MLB Daily Dish on Twitter. Yep. Follow me. I'm Mike Bates, SBN, on Twitter.
And
you can find me at The Original Bull.
I just want to just let everybody know, I mentioned this last week, but follow Mike Bates for when he goes out to karaoke, because that is some of the more entertaining things I've seen on Twitter in a long
time. Well, listen, I've been told, listen, there's a former writer, he's retired now, named Bill Parker, and Bill Parker is my heterosexual life mate. Bill and I've been told, we'll be going out to karaoke in the Twin Cities over the holidays at some point. Look forward to that.
Nice. That's, or don't. So make sure you follow Mike for that, because that's entertaining. And you can find me at Chris R. Schubert. I'm tweeting about pretty much anything and everything that's going on, especially if Steve Harvey's making a fool of himself on the internet. All right, guys, I think that's going to do it for us this week. I was glad to get all of us back together for a pre-holiday show. I hope both of you have a nice holiday with whatever you're doing.
To you as well.
And to yeah, absolutely. Both of you guys, happy holidays.
And the listeners, I hope you enjoy your holidays. And knowing the baseball world, something will break right before, you know, the Christmas Eve and Christmas happens, because that's just the way the baseball world works. So, all right, guys, we will see you next week.